You're listening to the North Peace Roundtable Podcast, your weekly podcast about theology and the Christian life.
The boys are back in town.
With all the shootings in town lately. All right. Thanks for tuning in. Episode 183.
Wow.
You guys didn't know this, but I recorded one by myself.
I did know it.
Oh, yeah.
Because I saw it.
Because someone had sent a question in, and then I was like, shoot, it's been a month. And I'm like, I'm just going to do it. It was only like 20 minutes long, but it's so good to see you guys. My name's Andrew. That was sincere. That was not sarcastic.
It was so lonely in here without you guys.
Hey, what do you think, Carlin?
Yeah, I think it's pretty great.
Corlin's here.
Hello, hello.
And Cameron's
here. G'day, everyone.
How has your summer been? How was your trip?
It was very good. We did a quick a week down south to Gibson's to see some family and had a goal of swimming in the ocean every day at a different beach while we were there, and we successfully met that goal. It was really cool.
That's fun.
Saw a pod of humpback whales just off the coast while we were swimming, which was awesome.
Yeah, your wife was like, we didn't even have to pay
$1,000. That's right.
To go see whales.
Yeah, tons of seals, like just a lot of good weather and ocean life, and it was really good.
That's awesome.
Yep, hotels in the Lower Mainland are ridiculously expensive for your average Abbotsford hotel. So Harrison Hot Springs was cheaper than your run-of-the-mill hotel. So we spent two nights there.
Like the actual resort
in the
thing?
Resort.
That's awesome.
With the hot springs was $25 cheaper per night than the Coast Hotel on the highway in Abbotsford.
Yep.
So pretty awesome.
Did you go in the the pools?
Oh, yeah. Several times, yeah.
Yeah, it's so great.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. Road tripping. It's right easier on. When the kids are older.
Yep. Amen. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can remember taking trips with 2-year-olds and 4-year-olds, and you're like, this is a huge mistake.
That's right.
What have we done?
We went to Tumbler Ridge this last weekend, and it was about that limit of where the kids start not enjoying being in the car.
Yep.
The naps are just long enough that you get the bulk of the drive done, and then by the time they're done asking if we're there yet and start getting angry that we're not there yet is right. We were right at that limit.
Yeah.
Right on. Cool.
What about you?
Hey, wow. I had to ask myself that last week. How you been, Andrew? It's good. Yeah, we're having a garage sale this weekend because we have too many toys that our kids never play with.
You had a family reunion, too.
Has it been that? Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a family reunion. My sister from Yellowknife came down. And then we actually borrowed a trailer and stayed out at my parents'.
Oh, nice.
House at Charlie Lake because my mom was like, I know you can drive home every day, but can you stay out here so we're all together? I'm like, sure. It's funny from a kid's perspective how amazing things are because it's like an old trailer that we borrowed from someone, but they were like, oh my goodness,
it's a house that you can move.
There's bunk beds. I have my own lamp in my bunk bed. What? I'm like, okay, you guys. And then Oliver, the table folds down into my bed. What? So it was super fun.
That's great.
And come to my garage sale.
I kind of miss having a childlike delight about the world like that sometimes. As an adult, I think about too many things.
Yeah.
Life was more simple when lamps in bunk beds made so much joy.
Yep, for sure. And then you just get cynical and old. What else does it do? How many miles to the gallon does it go?
Is it LED or is it going to drain the battery right away? Turn that off. Dude. I can't see.
That's funny.
Yeah. My summer's been pretty good. Our kids are growing up far too fast. Maisie is starting to stand on her own already now. Just starting right on the cusp of that adventure, which means my favorite stage of toddlerhood is arriving shortly, and that is stairs. I dislike kids learning to do stairs so much. so much. I don't know what it is. I think it's just the amount of care and caution, undivided attention that you have to provide a child who has to learn how to do the stairs.
Mm.
I love it once they're at the stage where if they do fall down the stairs, it
you laugh.
Was, well, they might start laughing about it, or they'll be okay because Maisie is.
Yeah.
And by okay, I mean, obviously
they're not going to hit their soft spot.
Broken bones and stuff can hurt. But I don't know. I don't love that stage, but It's been pretty good. Summer's been good. We're excited that Maisie is growing up.
Nice. How old is she? A year?
Next month. On the first of next month, she's a year old already.
Wow.
Time for another.
Yep.
Yep. It's just about. There.
Load those arrows up, right? Yeah. Isn't
that the quiver full? What if we have a smaller quiver? Like, I don't
know. Yeah, my quiver holds three arrows. That's that's what I decided. Hey, speaking of deciding things that God wants to.
You went into that also, with so much confidence.
I know.
And then just butchered it.
Hey, guys.
Yes.
Speaking of determining my own quiver.
I was already thinking of how much better of a shot I am than both of you because I only need two arrows. Yeah. You guys are slant-eyed shooters that need a quiver full of arrows.
Hey, it's called a lazy eye, okay? Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, today's topic is all about bioethics. It's funny because it's been a long time. I took a course in seminary. I think the book is up there. It's like Evangelical Ethics, and it's all, but we didn't use the term bioethics back
then.
That's
the first book I looked at when you said the book is up there. I turned and saw that one. I was like, I bet you it's that one.
Yeah.
And
then I took an ethics class in seminary all about all sorts of like ethical dilemmas that Christians might be in, but we didn't call it bioethics. So Coraline texted last night, what about bioethics? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Is this like AI or like, what are we doing?
I got to admit, I was a little bit caught off guard that you didn't know what I was talking about. Like, so when you texted, I was like, is he pulling my leg?
No, and then you said the definition. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course. Like
ethics
okay,
that have to do with biology.
Biological decisions. I'm like, got it. I'm like, but is this some kind of like new thing? But not really. It's been around forever. Mm-hmm. But essentially the topic is, how do we as Christians engage, I don't know, ethical dilemmas when it comes to medical decisions or like, and you just threw out some examples of like abortion, MAID. But I would say even like for some Christians, it's like taking medicine. It's
popping an Advil, surgery, getting radiation for cancer, like all sorts of stuff.
And does the Bible give us any kind of help with that?
I think it's a really interesting topic because I personally know of some people that absolutely love debating these topics, think it's really, really important. You could talk to them all day about it and they wouldn't get tired of it. And then the next person is like, I don't care. I just want my loved ones to live an okay life. Like if we have an infection, let's deal with it. If we've got cancer, let's get it treated as long as we can kind of thing.
Yep.
So it's interesting because I think that there is kind of a two ways you can respond to it, is being interested or just being completely disinterested. I hardly ever see anyone that sits somewhere in the middle of being concerned about it, but not obsessed versus not apathetic towards it either.
Yeah, it's actually interesting because in the fall, we're kind of taking, as a church, taking a break from Romans, and we're doing a sermon series about like our mission, vision, values as a church, but also answering questions that the culture deals with. And on that list is, okay, what is our church's view of life and death? Meaning, okay, let's tackle the topics of abortion and MAID. Because I get asked those things all the time. Is MAID wrong? Are we showing just mercy to people? Like, isn't that good? Is abortion always wrong? Like, I don't know when does life begin? Can we choose when we die? Like, all those kind of questions.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting timing because that's exactly what we're going to address as a church in the fall, going, okay, does the Bible give answers? And I think it does. Maybe not in a direct, like, it's okay to get radiation if you have cancer, because that didn't exist. Radiation didn't exist back then,
but
right?
Did the sun made it?
Sure.
And certain rocks.
Yes. But. Oh, he's one of those. If I get cancer, just rub rocks all over my body.
Go lay in the sun, buddy.
So it's fitting, I guess, that we're kind of talking about it, because I've been thinking about that quite a bit.
I think it's a curious thing to think about too. Maybe you are a listener who isn't concerned or at a point in your life where you need to be, and that's okay. Hopefully it's still helpful to entertain the idea of thinking of something that you wouldn't normally. I think they're a good topic to think about because I think once you get down to a topic like bioethics, you really start to bridge that gap of what does it mean to encourage human flourishing on this side of eternity versus recognizing that we're mortal and all of us are going to end up in the same place, so to speak, unless Christ returns before then, kind of thing.
Yep.
So it becomes really interesting, because what I find happens usually is that you can have people that stand very, very firmly on certain positions on certain topics. And then as you flesh them out, you realize that those positions maybe aren't as solid as what you thought,
mm-hmm.
given certain yeah. scenarios. So I was reminded just recently, I made a comment. I was hanging out with a group of guys and I made a very, very, very broad stroke comment about something that I thought. And immediately two guys were like, but what about these things? And to both of them, I had to be like, oh yeah, you're kind of right though. And they're like, see, that's funny, because you made a statement like it was true. And immediately we poked loopholes in it. And it's funny because I find bioethics can often provide space for conversations like that. And then we also want to honor God with what we do with our bodies and with yep. how we navigate the is sanctity of human life the right terminology, right?
Yeah.
And we want to view yeah. life as precious, so it matters how we do these things.
Yep.
And I think in this topic, you mentioned that there's often two parties, but I would venture to suppose that there could be those who, as Christians, look at things like maid or abortion and say those things are wrong. The term the hand of God or playing God or interjecting oneself into a situation that, you know, ultimately produces death, like one of those, is probably where a lot of Christians draw the line, and they don't even factor in things like a heart transplant as part of the conversation, and where someone poking a hole at that thought process could be like, aren't you playing God by
yeah, right.
by prolonging the inevitable yep. of this individual? But that's kind of a really sensitive and touchy subject, because I think we would then lean to, which we do, believe in that the gifts God has given surgeons and medical technology to support that. But I think the issue that we'll unpack is kind of end of life care, where we're prolonging life at what cost,
yep.
you know, our 93-year-old grandma, and we're trying to think of invasive procedures yep. to extend
yep.
12 more weeks or, you know, or 6 more months or mm-hmm. at what point do we not do that? And I yep. think that's an interesting space to.
So I think it's fair to say that this podcast, depending on where you're at in life, might potentially be something that is emotional for you to listen to. It's not necessarily that we give trigger warnings per se, but different people are at different stages in life. You might have family members that are debating procedures or having procedures done, whatnot. And so we would encourage you to approach those situations with the love of Christ and
yeah.
and to remember that not everybody has the same viewpoint as you. And it's not that, yeah, this is to hopefully have a good conversation about it and encourage you to think about your thoughts behind this and your position.
Yeah. I think first, one place to start maybe is like where I think a lot of Christians get it really wrong. And you kind of mentioned it with, because, like, for me, I'm like, okay, I want the Bible to inform my view of life and death and, like, care for our bodies and things like that. But some Christians have this idea that, like, okay, God is the one who is sovereign over all things, which I agree with. Mm-hmm. And nothing happens outside of his plan. He's in control. I get it. But then they'll then take the next step and be like, therefore, any kind of, like, medical procedure is wrong, because then I'm not trusting God and I'm trying to like alter his plans. I know, like you mentioned, there's some, well, not Christians, but there's other religious sects that are like, yeah, blood transfusions are wrong because of X, Y, and Z, and yeah. we can't approve of any kind of medical care. But there are Christians who like sincerely believe that, like, if you get cancer, you just have to have faith and pray and
ride it out.
It happened recently. There was a family that I was aware of that the dad, who was not very old, had a cancer diagnosis, and his group of friends and kind of the teachers that he was listening to was like, you have to have faith. And if you exercise enough faith, God will heal you, and you need to just trust God. And it was one of those cancers that the doctor told, like, he died, and the doctor told his family, like if he had come in right away, this is not a cancer that kills you. Easily could have been dealt with. And so, but his worldview, which I don't think is actually a biblical worldview, it was just like, well, God's the one that determines everything. I just have to take my hands off. I don't make any, I just have to have faith. But like, if you actually live like that, okay, well then don't put your seatbelt on when you get in the car, because you're just going to allow God. God will protect me, or if I die, it's his will. Like, so I think God has given us, even in the midst of his sovereignty, brains and reason and logic to like use our God-given abilities and brains to make decisions. And God has gifted medical professionals. Like, the stuff that they can do is unbelievable. And to save people's lives and to like intervene and do things to help take care of people's bodies. The one verse that I'm thinking of that if like the apostle Paul was ever like, did he have a view of like, well, just pray about it. And yes, for some things, but he writes to Timothy about Timothy's stomach problems. And he doesn't say, well, Timothy, don't try and do anything for your stomach. Just pray and have faith. He says, Timothy, drink a little bit of wine for your frequent stomach problems. And so there is like a medicinal prescription in the Bible rather than like, hey, just pray about it. And like, did Timothy pray about it? Probably, because we're supposed to pray about these things. But oh, right. Wine like maybe helps ease your stomach pain a bit. Yeah. So just drink some of that. So there's an example in the Bible of like, hey, you should use this medicine.
I think that they're a good place to maybe not start, because you already started the conversation, but something that's important to talk about, I think, is that we are all coming at this from the point of we view human life as something that is we're image bearers of God from conception, I think would be fair to say, of all three of us. And so from the moment you're conceived till the moment you die, you, the people around you and yourself should honor the fact that God has given you life. And so everything that we discuss is probably going to be filtered through that viewpoint.
Yeah.
If you want, we can get into the Bible verses that we'd use to prove that, but that's kind of just like a base setting. If anyone's tuning in and this is the first episode you're listening to, we're going to approach it from that viewpoint. I think that it's an interesting conversation that you bring up the verse where Paul talks about drink a little wine, because I think that it's actually a really good entry point into where is that line, like Cameron said, of the hand of God, so to speak, playing God with somebody's life. Where is it? Where does that line start? I view something like drinking a little wine, or for example, if you get a bee sting, a plant that's around here all the time is yarrow. You can like take it, chew the flowers and rub it on the bee sting, and it takes away the pain almost instantly, unless you have anaphylactic shock because of bee stings. Then that probably won't work. But like for your average Joe who doesn't, it actually is incredible how well that works. It's a flower that is a part of God's creation.
Right.
And I don't view that as intervening medically in the sense of like taking away God's sovereignty from the fact that a bee sting hurts kind of thing. I view that as it's a no-brainer course of action. Of course, if there's pain and suffering, you want to alleviate that. And yarrow happens to do that. So I view wine for stomach issues in the Bible as similar. It's kind of one of those, well, yeah, like wine would have helped his stomach probably in this case. They probably had realized that if he had a little bit of wine every day, it wasn't as bad. Of course, Paul is going to encourage him to do that, right?
Yep.
If you're someone who is dehydrated, you're going to suggest to have some water. Like, it's not like, well, this is God's will that you're dehydrated and die, so just don't drink water. It, to me, it seems like kind of a no-brainer.
I spent a lot of a lot of time thinking about that over the last 2 years because of my dad dying,
right.
And I've shared before, but this is maybe something that people experience a little more. A couple, like I shared it an hour or so before he died, he asked, phoned me, I was standing outside the Pomeroy, and he asked me about this pill the doctor offered to give him relief that would ultimately lead to his death. He could hardly get the words out, and he was worried about, is this suicide as far as insurance goes. His dying thoughts were considering the impact of his choices on my mother's future related to her insurance. And it was wild because immediately I'm like, no, like absolutely not. And I did think through that for such a long time because he had been in hospice for a week. I was just there. His death was inevitable. I was kind of resigned to there's a time to live and a time to die in Ecclesiastes, and his life produced decisions produced a reality that we were navigating, and we did pray, and I shared before quite vulnerably, I think, that I remember realizing that he will die because of the result of where he's at. But what I've come to is that death should not be a prescription or a choice in that, you know, what distinguishes his reality from Maid, for example, is we could have easily had Maid 2 weeks earlier. But there's this sweet time where death is so inevitable that I think it's morally fine for Christians to stop the aggressive postponement of the inevitable, which is the, could be life support. It could be intense intervention that is prolonging the inevitable. And I think as Christians, we should actually be more calm in those times rather than the hopeless who are clinging to avoiding the inevitable because of the fear of the unknown, where as Christians, it's more so my time to go. So in my father's case, the pill that was being offered was a pain medicine because his body was dying from intense cancer. And he, he took it and he went to sleep and never woke up. And did he kill himself? Absolutely not. Like, I think he it's actually same thing happened to two other family members where that's the choice. Do we let them writhe in pain, or do we relieve the pain, then let the body calm and it ultimately dies? It's not choosing death. I think it's choosing peace in the face of inevitable death. And I think that's a reality that many of us will have to face with our family and one day ourselves, is that the end is often not, they gracefully passed away in their sleep. The end often comes in our broken world and our broken reality with a form often of a disease that results in pain at the end.
I think that like the example of your dad is different than, hey, next Tuesday at 2 o'clock, the doctor's going to come in and kill you. Like,
yeah. And that would be prescribing death in the face of this,
rather than, hey, can he have some pain medication that will relax his body and just help alleviate the pain? Cause he's going to die in the next day or two.
But then there was, so I guess backing up a little more, he did 2 rounds of chemo and he had the worst quality of life ever. And he said, I'm not doing that again. And he made it, he gave it a good shot, but it was terrible because that process is designed to kill the cancer faster than it kills you. And hopefully we pull out just soon enough before it ultimately kills you also, which is how the oncologist described it, which I really appreciated to our family. This is going to be terrible. For a person in that position. So after the second time, my dad just said, I can't do that again. And him and my mom were like, and they talked to us and they're like, we're not, we're going to let it ride out. And it might've, he might've made a month or so after that. I was completely at peace with that. No, dad, like, let's do two more. Like, let's.
You know,
I don't know. My wife had a professor in Bible school that his quote was always, are you extending life or prolonging death? What's the basis of your treatment? Are you extending life, a flourishing of this human, the ability for them to regain a sense of normalcy? Or are you merely treating them so that their death would have happened today, but now you've given them enough medication that they can suffer in pain and death for another 2 weeks? And what was the point of that then? If not just a selfish desire to hold on to somebody, where we agreed at the beginning that death is coming for us all because of the curse, right?
I like that because I think the idea of, like, whatever you want to say, pulling the plug, you know, that's such a crass way to say it, but you get what I mean. Like, we're going to take you off of life support because this person is functionally dead. We're just keeping them alive with machines. And how long do you want to do that? Or the idea of, like, I'm not going to do chemo and radiation. I actually don't see that as, like, you're not trusting God. I see it as, like, we've prayed about it. We've used wisdom that God has given us. And yeah, if I'm like 90 years old, am I going to do chemo if I get cancer? Probably not. Because, man, I've had a good long life, and that's good.
There's a couple of realities, though. You could be young, and there's a situation where my friend, Sean, they discovered stage 4 colon cancer at 39, 40. And I think he did a round and then stopped because, unfortunately, he had ignored some really severe warning signs for a long time.
Yep.
And he was a pastor. He would have addressed them had he not been stubborn. And that's why he told me and my buddy Jamie, like, don't be stubborn, because they caught it too late. But then there's other situations where a former boss of mine had colon cancer and found it early and got it treated and did one, like, they removed a section, did a round of chemo, and he's still alive 15 years later.
Yep, totally.
As an old man. So I think that, yeah, it's not an age thing either. It's kind of a situational reality where if death is inevitable, as Christians, I think we have to navigate quality of life. And for him, it was like, you can go down this road, but you might not recognize your kids. Mm-hmm. And you might get a year, or you can let nature run its course and maybe have 6 months of actually being functional and aware.
Yep.
I think I've shared before that I got to witness a maid appointment, and it was the grossest thing that I could ever imagine. And it was for a non-Christian who just called, and I sent someone to my work to come and be with him. And it was frustrating and sad and gross. Yeah. But he was quite alone in the world, and despite it's interesting that he called me knowing my position and still had no interest in Christianity or anything like that, but wanted me to sit by him. And I felt, he asked me if I would come, and I told him I disagreed. I went against his wishes. He, in his position, was like, heck with all the family. He was estranged from everyone. And I ignored that and contacted his family, and he had some FaceTime with a kid, and a cousin flew here from Kelowna. And he still had this appointment, and the doctors in the room, it was just disgusting. There's one doctor that leads out, and they had two training students come in, and they just walked in and killed this person so matter-of-factly and had the audacity to say, oh, it's nice that a member of church, like a man of God, is willing to come here and be a part of it. I'm like, no, I'm here for Peter. Like, I'm not here for this. And it was super awkward. But I held his hand, and I just felt compelled to say, you're loved, man. Like, I talked to him a little bit, and he died. It was so weird. And then I went back to work, and it was the grossest procedure ever. Although I can kind of wrap my mind around why someone like that would do it. I could actually get there, because his life was just, he was living in poverty in a single room occupancy rental. He had a little bit of friends, but no connection, no life, no hope. It was really sad. But I understood, as gross as it was.
Yeah, see, when we think about that, like, for me, it's not, they're not even ethical things about, like, getting treatment for something or, like, you know, choosing to, I'm not going to do chemo. Like, that, for me, I don't wrestle ethically with, like, whoa, is that going against God's will?
Right.
The, like, end of life stuff and the disgustingness that we see, like, maid is the top killer in Canada now.
Jeez.
I just saw, I think 4 or 5 days ago that it's now, that's the, what's the number one cause of death in Canada? Maid. And then I think about, and I wrote down, there's four verses that came to mind where God specifically says that, like, he's the one that determines your day of death. Now, you could get into, like, oh, but you not taking chemo, you're trying to determine your day of death. I think, in my mind, that's actually different than saying, like, hey, Wednesday at 4 o'clock, I'm going to kill myself. That's, and you could argue that maybe it's the same thing, but I don't see it. Because, I mean, you have Hebrews 9, where the writer of Hebrews says it's appointed for man to die once. And that word appointed means, like, it's been decided when you die. I was actually reading in 1 Samuel, if you remember Hannah, she's barren, and then God, you know, graciously, hey, miraculously, you've become pregnant. And she sings a song. And in the song, it says, it's the Lord who kills and brings to life. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. So the idea, like in Hannah's song that she sings of praise, God's the one that determines when life begins and when it ends. Ecclesiastes 8, the writer of Ecclesiastes, no man has power to retain the spirit or power over the day of his death. And then what was the other one? Deuteronomy 32 says the same thing. God's the one who kills and makes alive. So there's lots of verses that say like, hey, God ultimately is the one who, if you die on that day, it's because he appointed you to die on that day. So I really struggle when, and I actually know of Christians who have taken MAID because they're like, it's great. It's merciful. It's, that's the way I'm going to do it. And I don't want to suffer. And I'm like, oh man, but you are being the one who determines. I'm going to be the God of my life. On Wednesday next week, I'm going to die. When it seems scripture is like, yeah, that's not your place. Like God is the one who determines when you were born and when you die. He holds the power of life and death.
And so for those Christians, is that a salvation issue? Or like it's
right.
I think we would rest on it's sinful.
Sure. No, I don't think it's the unforgivable sin.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a weird space, right?
I think it's tough to promote, promotes maybe the wrong term, to bring up verses where you say God is the one who appoints this, and even, I'm trying to decide how to approach it. If you believe that God is sovereign over all things and has a plan, then that person's choice to take MAID was a part of his plan because that was the day he appointed them to die. I think for me, it becomes the ethic of why are you choosing this?
Sure.
Is MAID something that is disgusting? I think there's a lot of cases where it is. If it's the leading killer in Canada, it can't all be cases like your dad where they choose death is imminent in the next little bit. Instead of extending suffering, death is now.
Yeah, and my dad wasn't a MAID statistic. Like, that wasn't
fair.
The reality.
But that's what I mean. Like,
But this Peter was, because he chose the date and time.
Yeah.
Made an appointment.
If your illness has you on the brink of death, and you're suffering, and say the doctors can't prescribe you any pain medication that does anything for your pain, you're suffering, and short of walking through that pain until death, unless God intervenes and miraculously heals you, death is imminent. I think that's a very different conversation potentially than someone who's healthy-ish in the body, but is not in a place mentally where they'd want to live longer. I think that is the conversation that I think is the matter of the ethic here, is that if you believe that human life is a gift from God, that God wants to partner with humanity to bring his kingdom, I think that's why we feel that disgustingness, is that we're going against God's design in the sense of we're taking something that is precious to God and throwing it away from our decision. I don't know if you, yeah, I think what I'm trying to say is I don't know if you could use God's timing and say God's plan was for you to die 2 weeks or 2 weeks later, but whoop, you sidestepped his plan and your plan was sooner.
I don't know what I mean? I don't view it that way, because I think the Bible holds intention that God is sovereign over all things, and yet you're still responsible for the decisions you make. Because I could do the same, I could use the same, well, I sinned, but God's sovereign, so it's not my fault, it's his fault, he made me do it. So I don't even actually view it as a wrestle to say, like, I just hold intention. I know we've talked about this. You don't, which is fine, because you're like, no, I don't believe that paradox thing anymore. Your view has kind of changed. But I just see the Bible clearly stating that God is the one who determines the end from the beginning. He accomplishes his purposes. He is in control. He determines when things happen. And yet every character in the Bible makes decisions and they're held responsible. So I don't see it a problem being like, okay, well, if this person then takes MAID, well, then that was outside of God's plan and they circumvented the day of their death. And I know it's hard to wrap your mind around that, but you could use that excuse for anything. Oh, I sinned again, but God's in control of everything, so it's his fault because he made me sin. Like, but the Bible would say, no, you decided to sin. And
yeah, so I think what I'm maybe trying to focus in on more so, I use that as an entry point to what sure. I was trying to focus on, and that is that I think that the decision to take life is the thing that I think we all agree is the broken part of that system.
Okay. Yep.
To take life when there is still a chance for human flourishing, when there is still that the outlook on life. Like, for example, you said the procedure with this gentleman that you sat in on was disgusting. And it's probably because you felt a sense of hope that something could change in his life.
No, not at all.
No.
He was inevitably going to die.
Okay.
And I was completely aware of that. The disgusting thing is for me is that our medical system has taken a turn towards veterinary care, in my opinion, because we, having a friend who's a veterinarian, I spent time talking to her about putting down animals. And she said, you don't go into veterinary care with the idea of putting down animals. But for her, every animal has a threshold to which, in her medical opinion, there comes a point where there's no value in pursuing. And then it's like our medical system did that, where they're now assigning a value metric to a human life, saying, yeah, we get it. There's no value in pursuing anything more. Let's just end it before we even get there. Where I think that has evolved from the medical care of human beings to nurture life to the point of inevitable death, even if it just means relaxing a person to experience the natural course of death versus using death as a prescription ahead of time, like you would do to a cat who got run over and there's no value spending $20,000 to repair its back leg. It's like it's just become, in my mind, and that's the disgusting part of the medical system, watching these two young intern doctors in residence trained to give lethal injection, which is all it is. It's like the same process of lethal injection. And so then I just feel like that's where the medical system became disgusting, because they've turned away from what I believe, and for the doctor supervising, where this wasn't even a reality in the medical system when he would have gone through school. That's what I feel disgusting about the process.
Yeah. So I think
but Peter was going to die soon.
I think what I'm hearing you say is that the idea that our medical system, who's trying to extend life, and hopefully we hope anyways that they're trying to extend quality of life as well, not just suffering. It was disgusting that they administered death instead of administering
as a prescription for even the subduing of suffering. So I don't think prolonging life is always the answer, but I think addressing the suffering is morally fine and appropriate to a degree. I think. Yep. Because I think that's what, like in the case of my dad, it was, we are going to address the immense writhing pain, the suffering, and allow death to run its course, which will be inevitable in hours, versus earlier that day, we're just going to end it. And
right.
So you don't have to experience that portion. The reality of those circumstances is that there's no, like, often, and I shouldn't say often, but in my life experience, both times, the consciousness of the individual is gone prior to the death, because maybe that's an element of God's grace also in that kind of immense pain, where actually I believe it would be, because I've had, you know, my femur shoot out the back of my leg and I didn't feel that craziness. I could see it in my mind. It's like I passed out.
Yeah.
And it was, call that a measure of grace maybe, for something so extreme that your mind does close off to it.
Yeah.
Before even medical intervention. So that was the reality for my father, and I found peace in that. But still, for Peter, he may have had a few more days. He may have had another chance to call his daughter on FaceTime. He may have, so that's not, maybe that's not quality of physical life, but there could have been some benefit to his estranged family over the next few days, pending his inevitable stage 4 cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, I think that's evidence for what we're all saying, that like the I think anyways that we would all agree that when there is hope for life yet, or flourishing of life, whether it's relationship, whether it's a quality of your physical life, that the process of taking your life or having others take your life for you is something that we would look at as a negative, as wrong, or at least as a perversion of what the medical system should be doing. But then it might provide a bit of a transition point. I realize we haven't given a solid answer to a listener that might be sitting there like, but is it wrong or not? And I think that's kind of maybe okay to leave you with questions too.
Yeah, see, I would even go farther than what you just said. Even if there's no hope, I still think it's wrong. Even if it's just like, this person will die and there is zero hope, I'm like, you don't have the authority to decide, well then, tomorrow at 10 o'clock, I'm going to take my life.
Yeah, I would land on it's wrong. I would land on navigate the inevitable, help your family member face it, work with the medical system to alleviate terrible pain.
Yeah, and I've actually been in a room when someone's, you know, man, they're gonna die. And there's actually, these people were Christians, so that is different. But I've also been there when someone's not a Christian, the husband was not a Christian and the wife was a Christian, and I had to go and kind of try and provide some kind of comfort. And there is a kind of sacred, holy moment, I think, when someone is nearing eternity. And for the Christian family, it was actually like beautiful. And the person was unconscious. And I think that is a God's grace, that he maybe allows your mind to go first and just, you're not aware of what your body is going through. But we prayed together. The family sang hymns together. There, it wasn't this like, oh, we have to end it because they're suffering. It was like, wow, this is really beautiful. Now, on the other hand, the other one was terrible because, and yet in that moment, to be with the wife whose husband is dying and to be able to pray with her, it was still sacred. So I just worry that we're like, we're just going to intervene and decide, you know, take this lethal injection and then it's over before. And I think sometimes we just, because it wasn't gross, the experiences I had. It was actually like, wow, okay, this was like a holy moment. And I just fear that in the like, I don't want anyone to suffer, which I get, suffering sucks. But I fear like we're missing, because we're deciding, like we will now decide when you live and when you die. Mm-hmm. And I just, oh man, that's why I read those verses, because it seems like God is saying, no, I'm the one that decides that. Like, and can you rest in that and still, yeah, give some painkiller. I don't think there, don't hear me wrong saying like, you're not allowed, you have to suffer. No. Because I think God has given incredible insight and wisdom to doctors to design, you know, ways to alleviate pain. That's great. But I just feel like now we've taken the extra step to be like, we'll actually alleviate all pain forever right now. Mm-hmm. Come in tomorrow and we'll just end it for you. And it's like, ugh. That's what, yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole another interesting sphere in the realm of this discussion that comes to interventions that may cause harm in other people. So there was a lot of work done on stem cell research and situations where medical technology at the expense of another human being, another human being causing end of life. And so there was a whole debate, I think, in the 20 years ago about aborted fetuses' cells and how those cells were then used to help medical technology, then predominantly for stem cell research. That's a really interesting space around, do I then pursue that knowing that it's a result of other suffering? Or decided end of life? That's a really interesting realm. I've not really explored too much other than remembering being a part of very big discussion in ethics classes.
Yep.
And then, organ transplant is a really beautiful, I think, really cool and interesting process. I don't know. There's a lot of people that are have one view of it or another. I think I'm an organ donor, and I did it.
Yeah, I like that you say, I think I'm an organ donor.
Yeah, no, I say that because I signed up once. I don't know how, if they attach it to your license maybe forever.
But oh, maybe. I thought maybe the black market got to you.
Yeah,
no, yeah, I think I woke up in a bathtub. Scar. Yeah.
But I think there's something pretty crazy about that intervention medically, and how I got it when I got my motorcycle license because they asked. And
you're like, hey, yeah, might as well. I'm not using them if I.
but there's really interesting Christian thought on that in camp, different camps, and I another friend Don, he had liver disease, and his daughter was able to be a donor, and that organ. They were able to take such a large portion of hers, and then it grows back to size.
Yeah.
And then Don's still alive today because his daughter was able to donate part of her organ. That's arguably the hand of God in determining that, like,
yeah.
But it's beautiful also. And I think I'm completely fine in those camps. And if I were to be in a vehicle accident and to know a person could live because of a kidney.
Sure.
I don't rest in that old conservative view of my body has to be fully intact in the ground in order to experience the resurrection of Christ.
Yes. Well, are you going to spend eternity with the only one kidney, Cam?
Less than.
But pretty sure God could recreate that.
But that is a camp where a lot of folks have some pretty strong opinions.
Yep.
I think something that we wrestle with in North America is we're actually very uncomfortable with the idea of death and suffering.
Sure.
Yeah, 100%.
Right. Yep. And so we view...
Because we went from live to the ripe old age of die in childbirth to now, if we're not hitting 80, there's a problem.
Yeah,
yeah. Totally. But also we, like you said, Andrew, it the process, if you're a follower of Christ, if you're a part of the kingdom, there is something pretty amazing about knowing somebody is going...
Yeah.
To rest.
Yep. Yeah.
I remember one of my uncles passed away, and my reaction was sadness for the family, not for him.
Yep.
If anything, there was actually a moment of excitement that he gets to be done suffering on this side of eternity. Yep. No more sin, no more suffering from physical ailment. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a gift. And it's part of the gift that we talk about with the gospel is that you get life unto the age. You get to live for eternity with your Savior.
Yeah.
And so I wonder sometimes, even for medical treatments, and this is where it's an interesting thing to wrestle through, because for myself, my wife and I have talked lots of, like, you know, I wonder if we in the West, even just modern, anywhere in the world, we want to prolong life so much so that we extend suffering unnecessarily, I think, sometimes.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I think that's where yarrow for a bee sting for me seems logical. That's pain that won't end in death. You're alleviating some pain with something that God has already provided. Advil for a migraine. I had one last night. I popped Advil because it was just horrible and it wasn't going to end in death unless it was a medical condition that I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so to me, those things are no brainers, that the things that God has designed humans to be able to make or figure out is an absolute, like, yeah, go for it. I think to me, it becomes, the conversation gets interesting when you go with, life and death intervening procedures. So for me, I remember hearing certain faiths have a vendetta against blood transfusions. And I was like, oh, they're crazy. And then you think of how weird it is to have someone else's blood in your system. Like, you get someone else's blood on your hands, you wash it off. Mm-hmm. It's gross. But then we're medically, we're like, well, I want to live longer.
Yeah.
So then we're okay with it being inside of us. Same with somebody's heart. If somebody gave you a heart to hold barehanded, or like cut you open and was like, let's just put that there, you'd be like, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to trying to hold on to our lives and the things that we have, and the, we're just not comfortable with the fact that we're pretty fragile creatures, actually. Yeah. So my wife and I say almost jokingly, maybe it's not the right approach, where it's like, I don't know. A lot of the medical things that we can do now, we say it's a great medical advancement. It's amazing, but they're kind of gross. It's kind of weird and not really what maybe barring sin not having entered the world, what God designed, we wouldn't just be trading hearts with each other.
It's just less weird until your kid needs one.
That's exactly what we said.
Because if your kid got injured, and I needed a blood transfusion when I was 19, because I had internal bleeding, my femur came out the back of my leg.
That's
and
external.
No, well, it was internal because it popped out of my knee. But I chose not to get one. Because
you're a Jehovah's Witness.
No, because being in the hospital was cool. I was 19. I was an idiot.
And then ooh, the nurses are hot.
But then in response, they made me stay for over 3 weeks and all they gave me was liver and broccoli. And I love liver now.
Oh, dang. You're like,
but I couldn't go back on the choice, but my choice was not an ethical dilemma. It was
Aaron and I aren't on the same page, but I said to her, I was like, you know, I think blood transfusions are actually really weird. I'm not saying that they don't work. I'm not saying that they're per se a sin. I think it's just really weird and gross that we would have someone else's blood in you that they kept in a storage facility. However, if my wife was bleeding out, I'd probably, if she had no consciousness to make the decision, then the doctors were like, we're going to give a blood transfusion, I'd be like, hop to it. Like,
so my wife been getting a blood transfusion every Sunday for the last 4 years.
Yeah.
The blood product keeps her alive. Otherwise,
is it pig's blood? Is that?
No. Oh my goodness.
I'm just joking.
So yeah, that month when everything was shutting down resulted in 3 weeks at VGH with a feeding tube
because
everything stopped working. And the only thing that could save her was someone else's plasma. And so, And so that was, they're like,
it probably felt like a no-brainer to you then at that point.
It wasn't even a thought.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be to you.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I remember having this conflict with a guy, Jared, who at the introduction of naloxone, I think we even talked about this before, but he's like, absolutely not. And then we're walking from our cars in and someone's dying in the ditch in Langley. And I had one and I'm fumbling around. I get on the phone and he's administering. And this person comes, like, we played God right there. Mm. They came back to life. And he was like, had this massive dilemma afterwards because he was so stuck in the conviction that I will never intervene in that space.
And then in the moment he did.
In the moment he did, because I was just on the phone. I'm like, hey, this is, and he you could see he wasn't even thinking.
Mm.
He had the ability then to intervene in what could have been an inevitable overdose.
Yeah.
And it resulted not in one. And I think we have to always be careful just to not put a lot of judgment into someone in their response in the moment to a degree to things like that, because I don't know. Yeah. Anyone who's challenged with blood transfusions, if a child got into a tragic car accident, it would almost be like, make it better, I think, in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just when you said that, I was reflecting. Tanya does have this. We have boxes in our storage room in the basement, 3 months supply of plasma. Someone else's donated blood. It's wild.
Huh.
Yeah.
Don't you have to like keep it cool?
Cool, dry place, just like your potatoes.
Store your plasma in a cool, dry place.
Yeah. Wow. And she goes to the hospital and she picks up this massive container and
that's wild.
Nurses came to our home from Kelowna to train us on how to do it, and she has a big sharps container. And
that's crazy. All this talk about blood transfusion, I know this is not appropriate, but it just reminds me of the Seinfeld episode when Kramer decides to store his own blood because he doesn't trust the blood bank, and then like Jerry gets nicked on an artery. And then he has to go to the hospital, and then they put Kramer's blood in him.
That's right.
And he's like, you got 3 pints of Kramer flowing through you, buddy. And he's like, no!
I think that it's something that every person, every Christian, I think, should wrestle through on what you're okay with. Because, one, knowing what you're okay with, I think, will inform your decisions for medical procedures ahead of time. Mm-hmm. You're not maybe faced with that existential crisis right then and there in that moment. So it's an uncomfortable thing for some people to think about. I think it's important to think about. I think that human life is precious, and so we should do what we can for the flourishing of humans. I think that is a part of being in the kingdom of God. And yet I think that different Christians will hold to different convictions on what that means.
Yeah. I agree, but don't think that all medicine is bad.
Yeah.
Because I think of that poor guy that died and it was such an easy fix. But yeah, I mean, there's some Christians who have this conviction that like, no, I'm not. I was going to say vaccines, but maybe we don't want to go there. But some Christians are like, yeah, that's my conviction. Okay, fine. Great.
Yeah.
But if you like have a life threatening thing and it's an easy fix, like, please don't believe that like, oh, I just have to have faith in God and I will never take any medicine. It's like, ugh. Because yeah, you have a headache and you take an Advil, and that's not sinful to be like, oh, I should just trust God that my headache goes away. Well, okay. But he's also given you like, hey,
yeah,
here's some stuff that will help you. I think sometimes, yeah, we swing to extremes. But yeah, I know people that their conviction is certain medicines. Yeah, I'm not going to do. And I'm like, okay, that's your conviction. That's yeah. great. And we don't have to like, I don't think you're sinning because you decided not to take this medicine. That's great. But don't swing too far where it's like, and we didn't even crack the can on like mental health, because some people are like, depression medication, bad, sinful. You should just be happier. I'm like, that's dumb. That is dumb. Then don't take Advil for your headache if that's your view. Because like, God has gifted doctors and scientists to create medicines that help with chemical imbalances in the brain. If that works for you,
it's such an
praise
ignorant
God.
Argument, because it's such an ignorant elementary argument to suggest that mental health is not a disease, much like diabetes type
totally.
1. Oh, this person, you know, people have their own thoughts on type 2. Like, they did it to themselves, but type 1, oh, it just happened.
Yeah.
But to suggest that ailments all ailments can be accentuated or heightened by choice, but ultimately
sure.
it's the reality of the broken world. And as you're speaking, I keep reflecting back on challenge of thinking God will heal me, I don't need that intervention. Again, when my wife was dying, he 100% whole, healed and delivered would be in the face of Jesus, I believe. So I like 100%, like we age, our hair turns gray, follicles die, like we like mm-hmm. on this side of eternity,
yep,
we can be pretty decent. I just don't think we can be 100% whole and healed, because that's, I don't know, that's just designed, I think, for when we're in the face of Christ.
Yep.
So I would challenge those thoughts of what it means to be completely healed in the absence of any form of medical intervention. I'm not sure. That might be a different topic for a different day. But
yeah.
And we haven't even touched on abortion, because I think these are big topics.
We need
a little more time.
Yep. I agree, because we've been going for about an hour and there's lots of different rabbit trails we could go down, but maybe we'll just save it for another episode. Because yeah, I like what you said, even the idea of suffering, because that's our passage this week. Paul's like, for I consider this suffering not worth comparing to the glory that's coming. And then he says that like creation groans, we groan, but with hope for the redemption of our bodies. So there is, suffering's a part of living in this fallen yeah. world, and it's meant to actually point us to what's coming. Even in 2 Corinthians, Paul says this light momentary affliction is not worth, or is like accomplishing a glory. So it's not pointless, right? It's doing something. But yeah, we could keep going and going. This is great. Maybe we'll stop there for today and pick it up next week. Thanks for tuning in. Hopefully this has been helpful and at least like thought-provoking, and
hopefully it encourages you to do some of your own wrestling.
Yeah, totally.
Because I think conversations like this, we do often turn to the Google AI summary. Is it wrong to do this? Is it right to do this? And God gave you a brain between your two ears to use. And I think that it's good to wrestle about these things.
Yep.
And seek God's wisdom in all these areas.
Yep.
And step out of your echo chamber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other people's brains are interesting to unpack also.
Yeah.
That's good. All right. Have a good week, and we will talk to you next time.